Blog Talk Radio.
Presence of the Lord is here. Presence of the Lord is here. I feel it in the atmosphere. Presence of the Lord is here. Oh, presence of the Lord is here. Spirit of the Lord is here. Anybody feel it tonight? Spirit of the Lord is here. I feel it in the atmosphere. Spirit of the Lord is here. Oh, Spirit of the Lord is here. The power of the Lord is here. The power of the Lord is here. I feel it in the atmosphere. The power of the Lord is here. Oh, the power.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good evening, podcast family. Excuse me. Thank you for tuning in. This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast, the Messenger Edition. This is Nurse Carmen, and we have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And again, we thank you for tuning in. And next, we will be having a conversation with the Messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and welcome to all. Tonight, we're going to talk about grief. Grief is a natural emotion. It's that part of you which allows you to say goodbye when you don't want to say goodbye, to express, push out, propel. The sadness within you at the experience of any kind of loss. It could be the loss of a loved one or the loss of a contact lens. When you are allowed to express your grief, you get rid of it. Children who are allowed to be sad when they are sad feel very healthy about sadness when they are adults, and therefore usually move through their sadness very quickly. Children who are told there, don't cry, have a hard time crying as adults. After all, they've been told all their lives not to do that, so they repress their grief. Grief that is continually repressed becomes chronic depression, a very unnatural emotion. People have killed because of chronic depression. Wars have started. Nations have fallen. Anger is a natural emotion. It is the tool you have which allows you to say, no, thank you. It does not have to be it does not have to be abusive, and it never has to be damaging to another. When children are allowed to express their anger, they bring a very healthy attitude about it to their adult lives, and therefore usually move through their anger very quickly. Children who are made to feel that their anger is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact, that they shouldn't even experience, will have a difficult time appropriately dealing with their anger as adults. Anger that is continually repressed becomes rage, a very unnatural emotion. People have killed because of rage. Wars have started. Nations have fallen. Envy is a natural emotion. It is the emotion that makes a five-year-old wish he could reach the doorknob the way his sister can, or ride that bike. Envy is the natural emotion that makes you want to do it again, to try harder, to continue striving until you succeed. It is very healthy to be envious, very natural. When children are allowed to express their envy, they bring a very healthy attitude about it to their adult years, and therefore usually move through their envy very quickly. Children who are made to feel that envy is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact, that they shouldn't even experience it, will have a difficult time appropriately dealing with their envy as adults. Envy that is continually repressed becomes jealousy, a very unnatural emotion. People have killed because of jealousy. Wars have started and nations have fallen. Fear is a natural emotion. All babies are born with only two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. All other fears are learned responses brought to the child by its environment, taught to the child by its parents. The purpose of natural fear is to build a bit of caution. Caution is a tool that helps keep the body alive. It is an outgrowth of love, love of self. Children who are made to feel that fear is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact, that they shouldn't even experience, will have a difficult time appropriately dealing with their fears as adults. Fear that is continually repressed becomes a very unnatural emotion. People, once again, have killed because of this. Wars have started and nations have fallen. Love is a natural emotion. When it is allowed to be expressed and received by a child, normally and naturally, without limitation or conditions, inhibitions or embarrassment, it does not require anything more. For the joy of love expressed and received in this way is sufficient unto itself. Yet love, which has been conditioned, limited, warped by rules and regulations, rituals and restrictions, controlled, manipulated, and withheld, becomes unnatural. Children who are made to feel that their natural love is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact, that they shouldn't even experience, have a difficult time as adults dealing with love. Love is continually repressed, becomes possessed. Possessiveness, a very unnatural emotion. And you know, people have killed because of this. And so it is that the natural emotions were repressed, produce unnatural reactions and responses. And most natural emotions are repressed in most people. Yet these are our friends. These are your gifts. They are your divine tools with which to craft your experience. You have given tools at birth. You were given these tools at birth. They are to help you negotiate life. So why are these emotions repressed in most people? Because they have been taught to repress them. They have been told to by whom? Their parents, those who have raised them. Why? Why would they do that? Because they were taught by their parents, and their parents were told by theirs. And it goes on. So what is going on is that you have the wrong people doing the parenting. And you say, well, what do you mean? The wrong people, the mother and the father? The mother and the father are the wrong people to raise the children? When the parents are young, yes, in most cases. In fact, it's a miracle that so many of them do as good a job as they do. No one is more ill-equipped to raise children than young parents. And no one knows this, by the way, better than young parents. Most parents come to the job of parenting with very little life experience. They are hardly finished being parented themselves. They're still looking for answers, still searching for clues. They haven't even discovered themselves yet. And they're trying to guide and nurture, discover in others even more vulnerable than they. They haven't even defined themselves, and they are thrust into the act of defining others. They are still trying to get over how badly they have been misdefined by their parents. They haven't even discovered yet who they are, and they're trying to tell you who you are. And the pressure is so great for them to get it right, yet they can't even get their own lives right. So they get the whole thing wrong, their lives and the lives of their children. If they're lucky, the damage to their children won't be too great. The offsprings will overcome it, but not probably before passing some on to their offsprings. Most of us gain the wisdom, the patience, the understanding, and the love to be wonderful parents after your parenting years are over. You say, why is this? I don't understand. I see that your observance in many cases correct, but why is this? Because young child makers were never intended to be child raisers. Your child raising years should really begin when they are now over. Okay, you're still a little lost. Human beings are biologically capable of creating children while they are children themselves, which it may surprise most of you to know, they are for 40 to 50 years. Human beings are children themselves for 40 or 50 years. From a certain perspective. Now, I know this is difficult to hold as your truth, but look around you. Perhaps the behavior of our race might help prove my point. The difficulty is that in today's society, you are said to be all grown up and ready for the world at 21. And to this, the fact that many of you were raised by mothers and fathers who were not much older than 21 themselves when they begin raising you. And you can begin to see the problem. If childbearing were meant to be child raisers, childbearing would not have been made possible until you were 50. Childbearing was meant to be an activity of the young whose bodies were well developed and strong. Child raising was meant to be an activity of the elders whose minds are well developed and strong. In today's society, you have insisted on making child bearers responsible for child raising. And with the results that you've made, not only the process of parenting very difficult, but distorted many of the energies surrounding the sexual act as well as. Now, many humans have observed what I've observed here, namely that a good many humans, perhaps most, are not truly capable of raising children when they are capable of having them. However, having discovered this, humans have put in place exactly the wrong solution. Rather than allow young humans to enjoy sex, and if it produces children, have the elders raise them, you tell them not to engage in sex until they're ready to take on the responsibility of raising children. You have made it wrong for them to have sexual experiences before that time, and thus have created a taboo around what was intended to be one of life's most joyful celebrations. Of course, this is a taboo to which offsprings will pay little attention, and for good reason. It is entirely unnatural to obey it. Human beings desire to couple and copulate as soon as they feel the inner signal which says they are ready. This is human nature. Yet, these thoughts about their own nature will have more to do with what you say. As parents haven't told them about what they are feeling inside, your children look to you to tell them what life is all about. Please hold 1 second, please. I do truly apologize. Yet their thoughts about their own nature will have more to do with what you as parents have told them about what they are feeling inside. Your children look to you to tell them what life is all about. So when they have this first urge to peek at each other, to play innocent with each other, to explore each other's differences, they will look for you for signals about this. And this part of their human nature, good. Is it bad? Is it approved of? Is it to be stifled, held back, discouraged? It is observed that what many parents have told their offsprings about this part of their human nature has had its origin in all manners of things. What they were told, what their religion says, what their society thinks, everything except the natural order of things. in the natural order of humans, sexuality is budding at anywhere from age 9 to age 14. From age 15 onward, it is much more present and expressed in most human beings. Thus begins a race against time, with children stampeding towards the fullest release of their own joyful sexual energy and parents stampeding to stop them. Parents have noticed all the assistance, parents have needed all the assistance and all the alliances they can find in this struggle, since, as has not been noted, they are asking their offsprings to do something that is very bit of their nature. So adults have invented all manners of cultures, religions, societies, economic pressures, restrictions, and limitations to justify their unnatural demands of their offspring. Children have thus grown to accept that their own sexuality is unnatural. How can anything that is natural be so shamed? So always stopped, so controlled, held at bay, restrained, bridled, and denied. Well, you say, I'm exaggerating a bit here, but what do you think is the impact on a 4 or 5 year old child when parents won't even use the correct name for the certain parts of their body parts? What are you telling the child about your level of comfort with that? And what do you think theirs should be? Only because you have so much negative baggage attached to the actual names of these body parts that you can barely use the words in ordinary sentences. At the youngest age, of course, children don't know why parents feel this way, but merely are left with the impression, the often indelible impression, that certain body parts are not okay, and that anything having to do with them is embarrassing, if not wrong. As children grow older and move into their teens, they may come to realize that this is not true. But then they are told in very clear terms about the connection between pregnancy and sexuality, and about how they will have to raise the children they created. And so they now have another reason for feeling that sexual expression is wrong, and the circle is complete. What this has caused in our society is confusion, and not a little havoc, which is always the result of fooling around with nature. You have created sexual embarrassment, repression, and shame, which has led to sexual inhibition, dysfunction, and violence. You will, as a society, always be inhibited about that over which you are embarrassed. Always be dysfunctional with behaviors with which have been repressed. And always act out violently in protest of being made to feel shame about that over which you know in your heart you should never have felt shame at all. Most of our psychiatrists have ventured as much. The human being is angry because it knows it should feel no shame over something that feels so good. And yet it does feel shame and guilt. First, the human becomes angry with the self for feeling so good about something which is supposed to be so obviously bad. Then, when they finally realize that they've been duped, that sexuality is supposed to be a wonderful, honorable, glorious part of the human experience, they become angry with others. Parents for repressing them, religion for shaming them, members of the opposite sex for daring them, the whole society for controlling them. Finally, they become angry with themselves for allowing all of this to inhibit them. Much of this represents anger. Most of this repressed anger has been channeled into the construction of distorted and misguided moral values in the society in which we now live. A society which glorifies and honors with monuments, statues, and commemorative stamps films, pictures, TV programs, some of the world's ugliest acts of violence. But hides, of course, yet cheapens some of the world's most beautiful acts of love. And all of this has emerged from a single thought, that those who bear children bear also the sole responsibility for raising them. Then you say, but if the people who have children aren't responsible for raising them, who is? The whole community, with special emphasis on the elders. In most advanced races in society, elders raise the offspring, nurture the offspring, train the offspring, and pass on to the offspring the wisdom, teaching, and traditions of their kind. Later, when we talk about some of these advanced civilizations, I'll touch on this again. And in any society where producing offsprings at a young age is not considered wrong because the tribal elders raise them, and there is therefore no sense of overwhelming responsibility and burden, sexual repression is unheard of, and so is rape, defiance, and social sexual dysfunction. Now you say, well, is there any such societies on the planet? Yes, although they have been disappearing, we have sought to eradicate them because you have thought them to be barbarians in what you have called your non-barbarian society. Children and wives and husbands, for that matter, are thought of as property, as personal possessions, and child bearers must therefore become child raisers because they must take care of what they own. A root thought at the bottom of many of our society's problems is this idea that spouses and children are personal possessions, that they are yours. Well, let's examine this whole subject of ownership. When we explore and discuss life among highly evolved beings, but for now, just think about this for a minute. Is anyone really emotional ready to raise children at the time they're physically ready to have them? The truth is, most humans are not equipped to raise children even in their 30s and 40s and shouldn't be expected to. They really haven't lived enough as adults to pass deep wisdom to their children. Now, I've heard that before, Mark Twain had a take on this. He said, to have commented, when I was 19, my father knew nothing. But when I was 35, I was amazed at how much the old man had learned. He captured it perfectly. Your younger years were never meant to be for truth teaching, but for truth gathering. How can you teach children a truth you haven't gathered? You can, of course, so you wind up telling them the only truth you know, the truth of others, your fathers, your mothers, your culture, your religion, anything, everything but your own truth. You are still searching for that. And you will be searching and experimenting and finding and failing and forming and reforming your truth, your idea about yourself, until you are half a century on this planet or near it. Then you may begin at least to settle down and settle in with your truth. And probably the biggest truth on which you'll agree is that there is no constant truth at all. That truth, like life itself, is a changing thing, a growing thing, an evolving thing, and that just when you think that process of evolution has stopped, it has not, but only really just begun. So you say, I'm past 50, and I've arrived at that. You are now a wiser person, an elder. Now you should raise children, or better yet, 10 years from now. It is the elders who should raise the offsprings and who were intended to. It is the elders who know of truth and life and of what is important and what is not, of what is really meant by such terms as integrity, honesty, loyalty, friendship, and love. So you see the point you have been making. It is difficult to accept, but many people have barely moved from child to student. When we have children of our own and feel we have to start teaching them, so we figure, well, I'll teach them what my parents taught me. Thus, the sins of the father are visited upon the son, even until the seventh generation. So you say, how can we change that? How can we end the cycle? Place the raising of children in the hands of your respected old ones. Parents see the children when they wish, live with them if they choose, but are not solely responsible for their care and upbringing. Now, I know what I'm saying here now goes against everything that you've been taught. But just listen to the logic of it. This is part of God's plan. The physical and social and spiritual needs of the children are met by the entire community with education and values offered by the elders. Elders. Now, later on in one of our other podcasts, we'll talk about other cultures and on this earth that will look at some new models for living. But these models won't work the way we've currently constructed our lives. You say, what do you mean? I mean, it's just it's not just parenting you're doing with an ineffective model, but your whole way of living. Now, what do you mean? Well, you've moved away from each other. You've torn apart your families, disassembled your smaller communities in favor of huge cities. In these big cities, there are more people, but fewer tribes, groups, or clans whose members see their responsibility as including responsibility for the whole. So, in fact, you have no elders, not at arm's reach in any event. Worse than moving away from your elders, you've pushed them aside, marginalized them, taken their power away, and even resented them. Some members of our society are even resisting the seniors among us, claiming that they are somehow leeching on the system, demanding benefits that the young have to pay for with every increasing proportion of their income. Yet, if your elders are contributing, it is because you have not allowed them to contribute. You have required them to retire from their jobs just when they could really do the company some good, and to retire from most active, meaningful participations in life, just when their participations could bring some sense to the process. Not just in parenting, but in politics, economy, and even in religion, where elders are least held. Had a toehold, you have become a youth-worshipping, elder-dismissing society. Yours have also become a singular society rather than a plural one. That is, a society made up of individuals rather than groups. As you have both individualized and youthened your society, you have lost much of its richness and resources. Now you are without both, without too many of you living in emotional and psychological poverty and depletion. So, is there any way to end this cycle? First, you have to recognize and acknowledge that it's real. So many of us are living in denial. So many of us are pretending that what's so is simple, not so, simply not so. You are lying to yourselves, and you do not want to hear the truth, much less tell it. This, too, we'll talk about later when we talk about the other civilizations that's highly evolved beings. Because this denial, this failure to observe and acknowledge what's so, is not an insignificant thing. And if you truly want to change things, I just hope that you will just allow yourself to hear me. The truth has come. The time has come for truth telling, plain and simple. Truth is often uncomfortable. It is only comforting to those who do not wish to ignore it. Then truth becomes not only comforting, but inspiring. There is some good reasons to be upbeat, to feel optimistic, because things have begun to change. There's more emphasis among us on creating communities and building extended families than ever in recent years. And more you are honoring your elders, producing meaning and value from their lives. This is a big step in the wonderful youthful direction. So things are turning around. The culture seems to have taken that step. Now it's onward from there. You cannot make these changes in one day. You cannot, for instance, change your whole way of parenting, which is how this current train of thought began, in one fell swoop. Yet you can change your future step by step. Step by step, we can change our future. One of the things we have to totally understand as I get ready to bring this to a close, one thing we have to understand is things change. Nothing remains the same. And if we can come to understand that things change and nothing remains the same, then we've got to look at some things differently. And with this podcast and a lot of other things, people, when talking to me, they, especially those that have been rooted in religion, when they hear me, somehow or another, they hear that I don't think that there's a God, even though I'm trying to let the world know that there is a God and you are part of that God. And so, once again, what we have to do is change our way of thinking. We have to understand, come to know who we are. Sometimes we think so highly of ourselves, and then in the next breath, we think so lowly of ourselves that we are not worthy. But we have to understand that when we put this whole world universe together, the plan was not wrong. And because the plan was not wrong, you are right. You are a gift from God. And if you can just accept that, then you can stop thinking that you are nothing but a filthy rag, welch undone. You can stop thinking that, because that is not so. You were not born into sin. That was not part of the plan. And because it was not part of the plan, it is not so. And so the sooner we can come to accept that, that that is not so, then we can be able to start to look at things from a different perspective. I thank you all for tuning in tonight. I hope something was said that will help you better understand just who you are. And on that note, I'm going to close out tonight from a song from my dear lovely mother and elder, who I respect and honor. And I pray that you all will do the same for your elders. I love you all. Good night. Have a great evening and a fantastic rest of the week. That was for you, Mother. Being a little bit of a DJ tonight. Mother, this
Amen.
Is for you as well. This one is for you, Mother. Missy, where are you, Missy?
Think about it, church.
Would you be ashamed?
Or would you be ashamed? Say that one more time. Talking about if Jesus came today. Oh, I want to be ready to meet him when he come again.
Thank you. You got the whole